The opioid epidemic. John Rappaport with us, and we'll get to your calls, stories next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Rappaport with us. We'll get to your calls as well as we talk about opioids. How did you stumble across this story, John? How did it come your way?
Well, I started reading a few mainstream articles, and of course, because I had been researching pharmaceutical industry for a very long time, it looked like something new and even more dangerous was breaking out. And so I decided, let's go a little bit deeper here, and then deeper and deeper. And, you know, I decided this requires a major alert for people to understand. It's not as if, well, there are all those other people that we don't want to know about that are street addicts and so forth. This affects every sector of the population in America, in England, everywhere around the world. It's just getting worse.
I don't know what it's like to be in extreme pain, and I hope I never have to find out. But are some of these pharmaceuticals necessary for some people?
Well, I think a few of them may be necessary in certain situations, but you only need a few. You need morphine, and you need maybe a couple of the other synthetic opioids, if it's even worse.
In a limited way.
Yes. And they can be used judiciously and correctly by medical doctors. They can be prescribed, and it can work. But there is always a danger of addiction. I mean, this is something that people have to be aware of. That you can become reliant on these drugs. So, you know, there's the upside and the downside, but it certainly doesn't require the enormous proliferation of 50, 60, 100 of these different kinds of opioids that the drug industry has been turning out. This is fueling the epidemic.
All right, let's go to the phones. Mark in Baltimore, Maryland, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks. I appreciate you taking my telephone call.
Sure thing.
First of all, I want to tell two little things. I had a sports accident myself, playing frisbee, and I got my right foot jammed into like a divot.
Okay.
And I tried to catch frisbee, and I couldn't get my foot out of that divot, and as a result, it broke my ankle and a little bit of the, you know, the upper the bone that connects to the ankle. So anyway, I was rushed to the hospital. And they didn't do an operation. All they did was a clean break, no chipping or anything like that. Nothing needed to be scraped out or anything. So anyway, they just wrapped it up, and the doctor said, you know, put me on crutches. Says it's going to take about 6 weeks to heal. Every day I woke up, I was in excruciating pain, very excruciating pain. So when I left the hospital, he left me with one prescription of OxyContin. And he said once that, he said you should probably only need that one prescription. And after that, if you need a refill, you have to call in for a refill because you're not allowed to get refills unless you call them in. And you got to come in to pick it up. You can't have it mailed out to you because it's a controlled substance. So the end of that story is when I took it the first few times, I said, nah, I'm not taking this anymore. No matter how bad the pain is, I'll take something else for that because I didn't like the way it made me feel.
Yeah.
Just like that song, Comfortably Numb. This made me feel uncomfortably numb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt like I couldn't even function. And then the other thing I wanted to say was, I didn't even know this at the time. Two of my friends died by accident because I found, come to not find out, that they were using street heroin, which contained that fentanyl that you were talking about.
Yep.
And, you know, people always used to say, you know, if when you die, make sure you die clean, because none of the relatives knew about it. I didn't even know about it. And I'm still staggered and saddened by it now that they would go to such length.
It's frightening. Mark, thank you for the call. The heroin use these days, John, that is at an epidemic stage now as well, isn't it?
Yes. And it's been established that these opioids, for many people, become the gateway drugs into heroin, because if they can't get the opioid drugs anymore, then they start looking for another opioid, which in this case would be street heroin. And aside from the dangers of the heroin itself, the injection, etc., a lot of heroin is contaminated with who knows what. I mean, I've interviewed people in the past who have knowledge of these things that run clinics, for example, and they talk about the various contaminants that can show up in heroin, which can be extremely dangerous. So, yes, the heroin addiction is at an all-time high, and part of that, a great deal of that, is coming out of the opioid addictions.
Do you know if this situation is as bad in Canada as it is here?
I don't know about Canada. I know in England, because I've been reading about it, that it's getting worse and worse, and it's spreading over England. There have been, again, open source materials and articles about this, and you see the same kind of shock by law enforcement over there, as in, what are we going to do? What can we do about this? It's taking over. We don't know how to deal with it. We don't have the resources. It's the same kind of shock that you see in America, and I'm sure that there is something going on in Canada. It just stands to reason, because it's easy to move these drugs up through the United States into Canada.
All right, well, let's go to Canada, as a matter of fact. We're going to Vancouver, British Columbia. Lynn is there on the wild card line. Hey, Lynn, go ahead.
Oh, hello, George. Hello, John. Thank you for doing this subject tonight.
You are very welcome.
And thank you for taking my call. I want to say first that, John, I think you're absolutely correct that China has created the opioid / fentanyl war that's occurring right now, not only in the G7, but in other countries. Now, let me get specific to Canada, but most specific, of course, I'm in Vancouver. And we are the West Coast, and so we are the gateway for the rest of Canada. The port, right? Now, here, I'm just going to make a few statements just with some recent statistics, because this is top of the news almost every day. And then I have a question at the end that might... Okay. So anyway, I'll just rip through it. So in Vancouver, this drug crisis has been raging for some time, and it just is increasing every month, every day, every week, every month. And it's also aligned with our housing crisis, both for rental and ownership. And here's your conspiracy, George. So in the summer of 2016, Vancouver City Hall implemented a 15% foreign, I'm sorry, the province, I think it was the province, that one of the two governments, 15% foreign buyers tax. At the same time, once that was implemented, like went into law, you know, a month or 6 weeks later, the presence of fentanyl and carfentanil, that's when we really started the spike in that, that presence went through the roof. To date, as of, you know, in the last couple of days in the news, over 1,000 people have died from already, since last, over the 2016 numbers total. So, like, we're already exceeding 2016 overdose deaths. Naloxone kits are distributed to not only the EMS throughout the city and Lower Mainland, but to ordinary citizens as well, because this is happening in families, and it's happening in, like, bathrooms at the coffee shop, like people that you would never expect. And so people are starting to carry naloxone kits because they recognize when somebody's ODing. I have witnessed someone falling through the door of a bank in an overdose, okay? Now, here's the question. Isn't this China's payback for the opium wars and all the, you know, the merchant wars, etc., the historic
I think
wars?
It's all, Lynn, about money. John, go ahead.
Yes, you know, you can make a circumstantial case that it is, what you say, payback for the opium wars, and maybe it is. But as I've also said, we're looking at a pipeline that goes all the way up to U.S. manufacturers, and I'm sure other manufacturers in other countries that are manufacturing these opioids at a fantastic rate. And we're seeing arrests. So that is preeminent. It isn't just one source. It's multiple. That makes it much more difficult. But the underground labs in China, as I referred to them earlier, make it much more dangerous and difficult because these designer spin-offs of the opioids are coming into the U.S. and obviously into Canada and England, and they are causing, some of them, instant death. It isn't addiction over a long period of time. It's people just dropping.
John, what's going on with methamphetamine? Because I'm told it is also at an epidemic stage.
That wouldn't surprise me. It's the up and the down. The up is the amphetamine. The down is the opioids. And people traditionally try to even these things out. They do, for example, you had cocaine and alcohol. So now you have opioids and you have methamphetamines. Well, I'm too wired on methamphetamines, and so I have to come down a bit, and so I need some opioids. And, you know, people just keep on rocketing back and forth, which is severely dangerous and life-threatening, no question about it.
In the Cole Porter Anything Goes show, in the musical, one of the songs was I Get a Kick Out of You. And Sinatra sings it a lot. But the original words in the song that they would sing widely in the theater was, I get no kick from cocaine. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. But they changed it to, I get no kick from champagne years later. So in the earlier days, was cocaine accepted?
Rampant. And rampant in Hollywood. In fact, there have been people who have written about some of the early fast-talking comedies in Hollywood, where very clever writers and the dialogue is going at rocket speed.
They were all coked up.
Yeah.
Good point. Let's go to Tom in La Jolla, California. Go ahead, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. I'm reminded of another Sinatra song, Under My Skin.
Yeah, exactly.
If you listen to the lyrics on that, it's pretty interesting. But, John, I hope you're still doing your one-on-one professional coaching on creativity. But comment and then a question. If you have seen Stanley Kubrick's movie Eyes Wide Shut, there is a scene where actor Tom Cruise plays a medical doctor, and he has to treat, in an extended scene, an overdose of heroin and coke injected. And my question for you, John, is pharmaceutical opiates is a very private, covert addiction. You often don't realize that somebody is on this until they OD, okay? And my question what is the, if you could walk us through a brief symptomology of what an overdose involves. If we have a son or a daughter or a family member or a professional friend who, it's more than just passing out, what is the specific symptomology of an overdose so that, you know, listeners to Coast can say, oh, you know, this could be something more serious than passing out.
Well, some of them, Thomas, choke on their own vomit. Some of them get induced heart attacks. John, go ahead.
Okay. Well, you would want to catch this, of course, before the overdose. And so, from a typical list of symptoms of opioid side effects, sedation, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, constipation is one of the main ones, respiratory depression, which can lead to death, I have seen several versions of these lists where they emphasize constipation.
That's what basically killed Elvis Presley, wasn't it? He was found on the toilet. I don't want to get into the specifics, obviously, but he died of a heart attack.
Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that you would look for earlier on to see. And you make a very good point about the privacy element here in this kind of addiction, because it is pharmaceutical. And so people and families, friends and so forth, can go a long time, some of them, and you don't notice anything, you know, untoward or very strange, except, you know, you would expect them to get foggy because of the painkiller sedation effect, not quite all there, and so on and so forth. I would advise people to consult, you know, many lists of common side effects of opioids so that they can perhaps catch this early enough in people.
Let's take another call or two before the break, and then we'll come back with final phone calls with John Rappaport. Let us go to Lee in Snowflake, Arizona. Welcome to the show. Hi, Lee. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I'm living at ground zero with this since I'm a caregiver for a disabled veteran, my husband. I have your next topic, John. You're such a brilliant medical researcher. About 25 years ago, I heard on the national news that there was a researcher at the University of Oregon who had discovered a painkiller from sea urchins, I believe it was, that is more powerful than heroin, but totally non-addictive. Never heard a word from it again. Never could get any more information on it. And I really wish you'd look into that. And then one piece of information I want to share with you is, and helping my husband, is that there's about 20% of the population that cannot process oral morphine. It gives them absolutely no pain relief at all because their liver can't break it down. And there's a lot of medical doctors that don't even know that. It took a pharmacist to explain that to me. And also, I think the public needs to understand, because like I've been to like the farmer's market and heard people shoot off their, or the swap meat shoot off their mouth about how we should yank all the opioids off the market and just get rid of them. And they'd be standing there selling their guns and their bullets, and I'd say, well, what are you going to do when your time comes and you're in unbearable pain at the end of your life? And they pointed to their guns, and I said, really? I said, how many people do you know have done that, and are you going to hand that to your wife or your father or your mother? So what I'm fearful here, because it's already showing up, when I go to fill his script, which is at 10 milligrams OxyContin, and the reason he gets that is because of the nature of his severe injury as a disabled veteran and his at the end of his life now, it gives you a more continuous pain relief, which is the smallest dose that they manufacture. I actually wish they would manufacture 5 milligrams, because otherwise, if you have a patient that's on like standard oxycodone, it has a tendency for some people to, they're either screaming in pain or they're comatose, where the OxyContin tends to give them a continuous level of pain relief so that they can have some kind of quality of life.
Hold on for a second, Lee. We'll come right back to you and let you wrap up your call in just a second. Well, next hour we're talking about the joy of living, postponing the afterlife with an incredible story. Wait till you hear it. When we come back in a moment with John Rappaport, we'll continue talking about the opioids in the epidemic, and of course we will take your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, those of you in the Los Angeles area, circle your calendar for Tuesday, November 14th. That is our luncheon series, last one of the year, and who will be our special luncheon guest? None other than Dr. Bruce Goldberg, the hypnotherapist. Bruce, I'm looking forward to this.
Well, so am I, George. This is going to be at the Great Greek Restaurant in Sherman Oaks, and the topic is going to be past life regression and future life progression. And don't be surprised if I don't discuss Dexter Monterey, by the way. You could come there in your orange one-piece jumpsuit from the 22nd century, if you want. By the way, the people who come to the luncheon, they're going to get, I'm going to give away three copies of my book, The Search for Grace, that was made into a TV movie, a documented case of reincarnation. In addition to the book, they'll also get a free DVD of the actual movie itself. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And in addition to the talk I'll do there, I'm also going to be walking around the room to each of the attendees, and I'll be discussing or answering their personal questions and maybe accessing their Akashic records to see whether they had past and future lives.
Yeah, we're going to have fun there. And if you want to go to this luncheon series, last one of the year, just send an email, thelunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. Include your phone number, lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. And welcome back, John Rappaport with us. And let's go right back to, of course, Lee in Snowflake, Arizona. Lee, I wanted you to get your statement in before we go back to John. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. I just want to finish it up. I really wish he would look into that researcher at the University of Oregon and that sea urchin. But also, I would like to postulate a theory I have of the rapid, monstrous increase of people seeking out opioids. I have a theory that because this is known that proliferation of wireless technology directly affects glucose metabolism in the pancreas and the brain and makes human beings less likely to deal with stress and to unwind and feel calm or whatever it is. And I think this is like a dual-headed monster. Human beings do like always have always gravitated towards addiction. My dad had a ranch, and when he'd let the cattle into the pasture with the plum thickets, the cattle would run after the plums that had fallen to the ground that were fermented, not the plums that were still hanging on the tree. And people would laugh how they staggered away. At a very young age, I learned that if you have a pleasure pain center in your brain, you're going to be subject to addiction. So human beings have always had this problem since the very beginning, but I believe that it's at a monumental crisis now because of what's being done to their glucose metabolism in their body. But good luck to you, John. Please do more research like that, and thank you for a great show.
Thank you, Lee. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
John, the sea urchins, of course, they have quite a sting, so maybe there's something in that kind of poison that they have.
Yes, I can tell you that there is ongoing research on substances found in sea urchin eggs, as well as sea snail venom. But this is all still in the research phase. There are no drugs on the market that I can see that have been approved. This is one of these situations where researchers keep on experimenting. They've done a few animal studies on mice and so forth. So it's more than just one researcher. It's a number of researchers, but it's not ready for licensing and so forth. It's hard to know whether this will ever come to market. One of the things you have to realize, of course, is that if it's a natural compound, then it can't be patented, so they're going to try to make many synthetics before they try to get government okay.
Is the opioids hitting the high schools?
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. Younger and younger is how all of these waves of epidemics go as far as drugs are concerned, because it's all about marketing to find new markets and traffickers and dealers and street hustlers. I mean, all the way from the top of the chain to the bottom are always looking for new customers, new people to buy. So I would say that especially in neighborhoods where people have discretionary income, you're going to see younger and younger children strung out on these drugs.
Nothing worse for a parent than to have to go through something like this and have their child die from an OD like that.
Horrendous.
What about medical marijuana for pain?
Well, again, what we're dealing with here is the logjam that's created by the pharmaceutical companies, because they are researching this, but they want to control the market. through synthetic versions, which, by the way, can be much less effective because the marijuana plant has many, many compounds that work synergistically. The anecdotal evidence, if you will, is widespread that some people find a great deal of relief from medical marijuana, a great deal of pain relief. And then you get into veterans with PTSD who find the same thing, tremendous relief. But where it's not legal, there is a major problem, you know?
That's right.
Major problem.
Let's go to Chris in Victoria, British Columbia, International Line. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Hi. Thank you.
I'm glad you're talking about marijuana because I'm a total avid smoker. That I have PSPD, and it's helped me so far.
It works. It works for a lot of people, Chris, as you know.
I was a criminal for a long time, getting beat down by the cops for it and stuff, and I'm in Victoria, so they're doing a huge thing here, and it helps so much. But as far as the opioids go, holy crap. They're the last person that's worked on the streets that have basically come back with any kind of numbers. 80% of the street drugs are coming back with fentanyl laced.
Yeah, and that's going to kill people.
People that aren't used to it, for sure.
That's absolutely right. 80%, John.
Gee. Yeah, and when he said laced, you see, that's completely invisible. It's not that, okay, here's fentanyl we're selling you. It's something else that is secretly embedded with fentanyl because it can be so addicting. So that's why it's sold that way. And a person who's the user has really no idea what they're ingesting.
Next up, we go to Joe in Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Joseph, welcome.
Hey, George. Hey, John. How you doing? Glad to speak with you. I'm visually impaired. I got three things to say, comment. First, I'd like to thank you on your medical thing when you talk about the 251,000 people, like I told Tom, and the 1.3 million that die from preferred treatment. You need to tell us where we can get that information. It's getting worse. And what about making opiates that are non-addicting? I'm sure they can do that. You know, it's like when you get together with your girlfriend and you have fun. That's non-addicting. So why the body can do that. Why can't we, with all our smarts, make that stuff and it's not addicting? And also, how do we write to you? I can't use your email because I can't do the captions. I'm visually impaired. But the medical deaths, Dr. Wallach talked about this on George's show, and I've heard you mention it's getting worse. That's what you know about, but what you don't know about, it's getting worse. Because I've read some material that physicians are taught not to admit wrong and all this. You know what I'm saying?
I do, and I know it's getting worse. For those of you who want the original citation on this, it is July 26, 2000, Journal of the American Medical Association. The review was called, Is U.S. Health Really the Best in the World? By Dr. Barbara Starfield of the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, in which she conservatively estimated that the medical system in the U.S. kills 225,000 people a year, which would be 2.25 million people a decade. I interviewed her about a year and a half before she died, which is another whole story. And she confirmed to me, she said, this is a conservative estimate, and studies have been done since my original review that peg the figure much higher. So for those looking for a citation, there it is.
Now, they talk about addiction as being a brain disorder characterized by compulsive engagement and rewarding stimuli. So what is creating the addiction? Is it the opioid, or is it the individual, or both?
That's a very good question. Now we get into, you know, the bottom line on this, which is individual responsibility. I knew a man who had been a solid heroin addict, to give you an extreme case,
okay,
on the East Coast. And I knew him pretty well, and I said to him, how did you get off of it? He said, one day I woke up and I said, I'll never do this again, and that's it. And never again did he do it. But this is an exceptional individual, and the withdrawal must have been horrendous for him. It's about getting involved in the first place, and what are you looking for? You peg it correctly. It's a combination of the individual and the drug that is the real psychological and, I dare say, spiritual gateway into, I just want some relief, and that's all I want. I'm not talking about people who are in severe pain. I'm talking about somebody who feels that their life is untenable. But instead of looking in other places for answers, the easiest thing to think about is, well, I'll try a drug. And eventually that turns into a complete catastrophe.
Yeah,
so
sure does.
There is this major issue of individual accountability, responsibility, choices that people make. You can't sidestep that. You cannot simply say, oh, that's not important. This is absolutely lock and key physical addiction. Nobody can do anything about it. Not so. Not so.
Let's go to April in Gold Hill, Oregon. First-time caller. April, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good evening, John. Good evening, George.
Hello, April.
Hi.
Well, I'll start with the A side of the coin. I myself am a chronic pain patient. I've dealt with fibromyalgia for almost 20 years now. It's been an incredible journey, to say the least. At one time, I was taking Norco and Percocet at the same time. Through this whole journey, personal responsibility does come into it. You have to open up and start educating yourself to alternatives. I went through a study. It's called a NeuroPoint, and it's a device they put on your head, and it sends electrical stimuli into this pain center of your brain. In order to join that study, I had to completely get off all my medications. When the study was over, I did not want to go back onto the medications. I had a doctor at the time who asked me if I had considered cannabis. And since then, I have obtained my medical card, and I do a cannabis extract at night. I take it right before I go to sleep. I sleep through everything, and I wake up in the morning, I'm completely functioning. I feel no side effects of this THC. I don't like the feeling. That's why I do it at night to help me sleep. And my pain, I stay at about a 5 and under. When I get really bad, I take one Tramadol and an Naproxen during the day, and that's where I stand in my pain control. But I also use isochronic tones. I use water therapy and massage. And the thing I'd like to say about that is I'd like to see more insurance companies start incorporating alternative methods for pain patients instead of, okay, we'll pay for that Percocet script, no problem. But when you go and you ask them if they can cover acupuncture or massage, they won't do it.
They won't touch it.
No. So
they won't pay for anything preventative.
Exactly. And those things really work. Now, that's the A side of the coin. The B side of the coin. I'm a pharmacy technician. That's what I do for a profession. I watch this every day. It's very disturbing. And that's another reason I started to go away from the opioids. My own personal doctor, she was prescribing 120 Tramadol a month for me.
Oh, too much.
I only take 30 Tramadol, or I should say took, because...
That was still too much, April.
I agree. But like John said, cannabis has cannabinoids that work with our body synergistically, right. And I think it's healing my body in a lot of ways.
And ironically, the DEA will crack down on you for that if it's not legalized in your state. And of course, the feds sometimes are cracking down on states even if they've legalized it. But with the opioids, they're not touching those.
And it's sad. But so now I'm down to probably less than 20 Tramadol a month now. And I take it once a day.
Are you trying to wean yourself off it?
Yes. So to long story short on that part, I went to my doctor and I told her, I said, you and I are both in the health profession. I'm watching what's going on. I worry about your license as well. So do me a favor. Stop giving me 120 days a month. I'm not going to lose them. I have no use for them, and I don't fill the script. But it looks bad on your record. 2 months in a row, I went to her, and I requested that she not prescribe that much, as she kept doing it. And finally, I realized she was just so busy, she didn't, her medical assistant would just do whatever.
Would just do whatever it was originally, yeah. Just the rubber stamp it.
Right. So then I go to work, and I watch people come in daily, and they're coming in with scripts, like John said. There's no reason for this many types of opioids to be being used.
Have you ever suspected somebody was getting them illegally, April?
No, because I'm on the legal side of it. So I don't see
you
that
don't see
part
that
of it.
Part.
I don't.
But, I mean, would you see somebody come in often for the same prescription?
Well, we deal with chronic pain patients who do come in all the time. And, yes, we have had illegal people come in trying to illegally obtain them with false scripts and things
they,
like that.
They make it up and everything else.
Well, they go to doctors and they bring in these scripts, and usually they're out-of-state doctors, and it's just really suspicious. But I have patients who monthly, they will come in, and on a monthly basis, they will fill oxycodone, MS Cotton, and MS Immediate Release.
And they'll sell it to other people. Almost out of time. John, I want to get your reaction to April, and then we're going to wrap up here.
Yes, she's talking about exactly what I was laying out there. People come in from out of state. Now, why is that? Well, in many cases, it's because they are dealers and obtained the prescriptions from some rogue doctor.
I wonder if the pharmacy shop flies them in like Vegas does at casinos.
Well, as
we'll
I
put
said,
you on a plane. We'll bring you here. We'll pick you up at the airport.
Yeah, my insider told me, he said, I have seen, airline records of some of these people. They fly in like clockwork once a month to some nowhere place. And they buy a prescription, they fill it, and they fly home. And then the next month, on the same date, they fly in again, and they keep doing it. These are the dealers.
Scary. John, I want you to keep in touch with us. Any updates on this story, get back to us, okay?
Absolutely, George. Thank you so much for allowing this to get out to your global audience.
Absolutely. We need more and more of this. John Rappaport, great investigative medical reporter. He digs and digs deep. How he comes up with some of these stories beyond me, but I'm glad that we've got him on our team. In a moment, it's called The Joy of Living, Postponing the Afterlife. Barry Eaton with us. We're going live down under in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch your dial.